What's up, fellow aunties and uncles? Welcome or welcome back to the Go Smudge Yourself podcast. This is the podcast where we have bigger, badder, land back conversations, support reconciliation above all else, and learn how to be a better ally to Indigenous peoples. I'm your host, Jen Green. I am fucking sick, and as in cough, cough, sick, although I'm pretty fucking sick as well. You know, what's up? You're listening to episode 27, Land-Based Healing, featuring Daron Fox, which, by the way, just as a side note, before we even get started, has audio issues at 1 hour and 8 minutes to 1 hour and 10 minutes. It's not you. It's me, okay? But anyway, listen. Okay, so we recorded this episode in fucking April, okay? Daron, thank you so much for your patience with me. You are the real MVP. I'm gonna let him introduce himself properly after this quote-unquote short little intro here, but I wanted to just, you know, hold my hands up in a good way to Daron. I just said your name so badly. I'm so sorry to Daron. He's such good medicine, and even like listening back to this podcast while I was editing, it was just like so uplifting and just really reminded me how much I needed to take better care of myself as I'm like recording with gravel in my throat. But you know, like I love what I do, and I can't do it in the way that I've been treating myself, and we're gonna get into that in just a little bit, okay? First, I have some very important little updates to tell you. So for anybody who likes to skip the intro, I really do urge you, this is the one good one to listen to. First, I have a story to tell you that's not really a story, but it's like a podcast update that everyone has been emailing me about. And also, I switched my podcast setup. You're gonna hear that in the podcast itself. I don't like it very much. I'm wanting to switch back, but at the same time, it just is what it is. You're going to hear some cars driving by me. It is what it is. So first, I have a story to tell you. Second, I have buy me a coffee updates and mentions. Third, I have two free or buy donation workshops that are coming up this month and next month. So if you're interested in taking, and that's as of recording this, by the way. So if you're interested in taking one of my workshops, but it's either like cost prohibitive or otherwise inaccessible, these workshops are kind of like the shorter little like amuse-bouche, you know, versions. And then fourth, I'm going to let you know what Daron and I had talked about in this episode, and then we'll just get the party started. So, okay. The story. So I have a story to tell you, right? Because a lot of people have been emailing me and asking me, like, is the podcast still going? Like, where'd you go? Et cetera, et cetera. Which, obviously, the podcast is still going since I posted. We had no way of knowing that before. I had to take an impromptu hiatus, and this time it really was not planned. It's basically the result of me taking half-ass breaks throughout the past 2 years when, like, I'm burned out and I actually, like, my body's, like, telling me that I needed to, like, stop, drop, and roll. Just kidding. I'm sorry. I'm in a really dumb mood right now. No, I actually had to stop, though. So during the transition from freelance and contracted to, like, full-time position with Next Meast, I had, like, a really tough decision that I had to make in terms of my physical health, my mental health, et cetera, et cetera. I was burning the candle at both ends. I still kind of am, but I'm being a little bit better, you know, a little bit better. I was working like 3 jobs. I don't sleep very well. I was drinking a shit ton of coffee, preparing for the potlatch, which as of recording this, it was last weekend. And then of course, caring for the 4 babies. And I noticed that like my hair started falling out, like, and I've been on the verge of this cold, like this one that you're hearing right now, since April. And I just kept telling myself that, like, I don't have time to be sick, which is so fucking pathetic if you think about it. Like, I teach cultivating safe spaces and, like, promoting wellness instead of hustle culture and all that jazz. But I always thought that since I wasn't doing this for the money, that it wasn't the same, right? Like, I was like, it's not hustle culture. Like, I'm so passionate about what I do. It's like, so fucking stupid. So that was bad. My hair was like falling out, and I started to get like up to 3 migraine attacks a day that were not responsive to medication at all. And so I couldn't even like look at my computer screen for more than 5 minutes without it triggering what felt like my brain cramping. It was so painful. So all this to say, like, I was hella burned out. Like, I had no choice. It was either like stop working entirely or like step back from the things that require you to look at a computer constantly. And that was basically the podcast. And I didn't want to post like a video being like, I'm on hiatus or anything like that, because I didn't anticipate it being this long, right? Like, I want to have like a podcast talking about burnout. God, my voice is already going. But I didn't think that it was going to take this long, because I didn't really anticipate like the severity of my burnout while I've been transitioning to Next Meese and stuff. I've been like in denial about it. But my migraines are slightly better. My hair is no longer actively falling out. But it is much thinner than it's ever been. And I feel kind of like I want to cut it. it's been a big wake up call to like how stress and imposter syndrome or perfectionism can impact you. Like, even when you're the person who's like hosting workshops and like giving grace and like teaching other people not to be so hard on themselves, like, I wish that I had spoken to myself more about that, you know? Like, your body hears everything that you say, and like, there's the fact that I was like, I can be sick after the potlatch, and then literally the day after potlatch, this cold just smacked me in the face, and I was like, well, I did say I could be sick after the potlatch. Like, it's so stupid. But actually, it's funny because, like, in this podcast episode coming up, you'll literally hear Duran call me out on this, like in this episode. And I wish that – it's so funny. Like, I wish that I had sat with that even more and, like, held it closer to my heart. Like, I always get upset about myself with, like, how long it takes me to get my workout. And, like, I feel terrible. And like, I've let people down because I can't put things out at the pace that I used to prior to my grandma's passing. And it's just, like, it's so interesting to me that we talk about, like, being ready to learn lessons, or, like, how you have to be ready to go back to the land, like, in this episode, right? Like, this specific episode. But this podcast episode took so long for me to be able to edit, and like, I was just so unwell, I couldn't edit it. And so this episode is literally coming out exactly when like I'm ready to receive it, like me. So yeah, editing it here now in this position, kind of like post potlatch, I've been slowly editing it over the summer, but again, like, just instant brain cramps. It just hits different than if I had edited it edited it and put it up right away. Like, these are lessons that I was meant to learn. Like, and while I'm sad that it took so long to get the podcast out for Duran, like, I want to honor his time. Like, again, I hold my hands up to you for like giving me your time and also just being so patient. It's almost a gift to me, right? Like, it's a gift for me that it took so long, because of just getting to listen to him again after this most recent burnout. he has so much truth and so much knowledge. And post potlatch, when I'm really going through like a lot of hard discoveries about like my family and about my life, a lot of things have been really thrown up in the air. Lots of like lies and stuff that are being confronted about my childhood and stuff. This was like when I was supposed to hear these lessons, I think. So again, like, I really do, I want to thank Duran for your patience, your openness, and like, I can't wait to chat with you again. And then on that note of like late work coming out, actually, I'll just use this as a segue into like my second point here, which is the buy me a coffee. First, I just will always want to stress that if you've canceled, like if you've canceled your membership since having, signed up for it, if you've canceled it before I've had a chance to thank you and I'm thanking you now, it doesn't upset me. The biggest contribution you can ever make to this podcast, I've said it over and over and over, it's your time, right? I wouldn't throw out a 5-star rating, you know, if you could hit me up with that. And then of course, like, sharing the podcast with your friends and family, that it means so much more to me than the monetary contribution. So if you've canceled, like, again, I don't want anybody to ever feel like they have to justify that to me. So between when I was last online and now, I had 4 members join the community, and I do want to thank them here. So forgive me if I say your names incorrectly. I have Jane Spielman, Marina Zerko, Danielle Claire, and Jennifer Gordon. And I'm also now just realizing I think that the Buy Me a Coffee automatic Discord invitation still isn't working. So to these people who I just named, if you never got an invitation to our Discord and you want to check it out, even if you haven't continued your membership, please let me know and I can give you a month membership on our Discord server. And you can just kind of like hang out, do like a monthly Decolonial book club with us if you want to. That's where we host it. And then, of course, members get to ask questions for upcoming guests. And of course, this is one of those instances where I forgot to ask them if they had any questions. So too bad. So sad, guys. Sorry. And then for the people who are listening and they're like, wait, what? What is Buy Me a Coffee? What is she talking about? Well, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can. It has to be decaf now because apparently I'm not allowed to have caffeine anymore. The link is in the, got my voice. I'm so sorry. The link is in the description box, but it's buymeacoffee.com/smudgeyourself. There are also free resources there, including an updated land acknowledgement PDF that's like way prettier than the last one because our graphic designer at Next Meese rebranded it for me. It's like chef's kiss, like a thousand chef's kisses. It's beautiful. And I'm actually also thinking that I might discontinue the membership option going forward and then just like grandfather those who are already on the Discord in. Again, having struggled with burnout, and I feel really sad when people buy a membership and they can't put content out at like the pace that's like reasonable. I don't feel confident with it right now. So I know my current Buy Me a Coffee members have asked like, how else can we support you? And I'm not really sure yet. But like I said before, like I feel like even just your time sharing the content, it's amazing. The book club is such a support for me. Like you have no idea being able to like sit down on Zoom with you guys every week is really nice. And then also if you have any good podcast editors that might be able to lighten my load a little bit, that would be amazing. And then also just another segue here, like, you can also support me by attending or promoting the workshops that I host, like through Cultivating Safe Spaces, the land acknowledgement workshops. Like I said, some of them are free, right? So like feel free to share them. So I have a few coming up. We'll segue into the next point. I actually have a reconciliation event that I'm helping to host with Next Meese. And that one is $50 a seat. It's on September 29th, and it's going to feature a Cultivating Safe Spaces workshop, a land acknowledgement workshop, and transformative storytelling for reconciliation. So I'll leave that link in the show notes and the podcast resource page. And then on October 5th, I have a free or by donation 90-minute virtual Cultivating Safe Spaces workshop. And then again, I'll leave the link for all the ones that are available in the show notes. That's a very fast vehicle just speeding by. In the show notes or podcast resource page, which is on my website. It's always on my website. And then the next one I don't have a link for just yet, but that one is going to be October 26th, and it's a free 60-minute land acknowledgement workshop that's teaching people how to go beyond land acknowledgements into relationship to place. So if you're looking for non-monetary ways to support me or the work that I do, like share those workshops far and wide, right? Or consider attending them, show it to your bosses, especially like tell them about the reconciliation event. It's really good stuff. And like I said, I have like larger paid versions of the workshops coming in November, and I'll link those as soon as I have the events created. But for non-monetary ways, honestly, like even attending or getting your friends and family to attend those free events, that's awesome. That's perfect. We just want to get as many people kind of pulled into the Cultivating Safe Spaces world as possible, because it's part of that reconciliation effort, right? And decolonizing not only workspaces, but decolonizing on a personal level. Okay. And then one last little thing that I almost forgot about. You can also, just as a side note, sign up for my Linktree notifications. Like you can just sign up to be notified when I post upcoming workshops as well, or when there's a new podcast, or et cetera, et cetera. That little link tree has like updated everything, so that's nice. And then, okay, so wow, that was a lot. And you also kind of heard like a little bit of what Duran and I spoke about But if you want a little bit more, we spoke about land-based healing, his journey into his work with mentorship. We spoke about his work with tiny houses, which is like so exciting, and making housing security accessible for his community. We talked about coming-of-age ceremonies and standing in your power. It's honestly, it's such an amazing podcast, and you're in for a treat. I promise my voice does not sound like this throughout the whole thing. It's just the intro and the outro. So let's get this party started.
What's up, fellow aunties and uncles? Welcome back to the Go Smudge Yourself podcast. This is episode 27, and I'm your host, Jen Green. So I actually have a pretty cool guest right now, and I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to pass the mic over. I'll let him introduce himself in a good way, and then we're going to chat about his company and the cool things that he's been doing, not just from like my home territory, like in the Yukon or what's now called the Yukon, but also just like around North America. Like, you've done a lot of work, right? So, okay. I'll pass the mic. You go for it. Introduce yourself, and I'm gonna quiet down.
Just real tradition, aunties and uncles. Aunties and uncles. I'm gonna say grandmothers or grandfathers. There you go.
Relatives, eh?
So yeah, my name is Daron Fox. I'm 33 years old from Whitehorse, Yukon. Come from the Crow clan. I'm Northern Toshone and Kaskadene on my mother's side. We're matriarchal people. I'm Ojibwe on my father's side, Satu Ojibwe from Yellowquill. My great-grandma was Kitty Bill. My great-grandpa was Sue Bill. My mother is Jacian Fox, and my father was Colvain Fox, also known as Ernie Okimi Wasson. And yeah, happy to be here. Happy to chat with you about some engine stuff, laugh around, and I've already smudged myself, so I think we're clear and good to go.
Yeah, and your smudge was definitely better than mine. I was like, I never get that much smoke. Like, how do you...
I need cleansing. It's not a good...
I can still see it, like, going in the corner.
I'm trying to put it out over here. It's just not working.
Yeah, mine was... I was like, oh, I'll do sweetgrass because my asthma has been really bad lately. So the sage smoke, I try to do that outside. But yeah, I was watching you as you were smudging and I was like, damn, that is really nice smoke. I don't ever get that. Like, even when I'm like outside with my sage.
Yeah.
I just suck. Okay. Well, thank you for introducing yourself. Yeah, I wanted to, obviously, like I said, like I've got a bunch of questions, but first I want you to talk about like how you got started, because you do a lot of land-based stuff, which is just like, everything that you talk about, like whenever we have a chance to talk or like whenever I see kind of like what you're working on, I'm like, I just want to come home. Like, I want to be in the Yukon. This is so like, oh, this is the stuff that I want, that like really gets me like going. So yeah, let's talk about like how you got started, what your projects are like, and like your passions. Let's just jump in.
Cool. Well, I can give you the westernized introduction and then kind of more of the that if you like. I always like to, because I mentor a lot of young people too, and help a lot within the community. So I always like to express one foot on the land, one foot in modern day, and how we're trying to bring back our way of speaking about things more connected and more meaningful. So mm-hmm. westernized way. My business is named Solra after my older sister. Solra means baby gopher in Northern Toshone, and that goes back in my family hundreds of years. So my great 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 grandma was Solra, her great great grandma was Solra. It means baby gopher in Northern Toshone. My older sister passed away when she was 33 years old from spinal meningitis, complicated by HIV, because she was on the east side of Vancouver doing drugs for years, and then she came home, and then yeah, she ended up catching spinal meningitis, passed away. So her name was something that it was hard to hear growing up after she passed away. I was 16 when she passed, and it basically changed my life. So instead of being triggered by hearing her name, I'm like, I got to make it something good, something worth it, right? So I started the business after I quit doing alcohol and drugs, and just started helping in the community. The work we basically do is youth cultural revitalization. That's basically the title that we have underneath everything that we do across North America. But the better way to kind of express it is we're kind of rovers in Indigenous work. So we don't just do one thing. We base it basically on kind of what's needed in the community and what we're individually passionate about. So it changes year to year. It changes by life circumstances. It changes by anything that's occurring. You know, it's very organic and fluid in that way. And I wanted to keep it that way when I first started, I think 12 years ago. So it's been 12 years now. Yeah, we do everything from land-based stuff, always bringing together elders and youth, mentorship. I'm a licensed counselor, trauma-informed, so I help young people get out of addictions of alcohol and drugs as well. We help in the health sector, education sector, justice sector. We work with provincial and territorial governments and federal governments, work in the states, helping out and organize some of their community development, community stuff. Do a lot of traditional workshops, drums, snowshoes, many different traditional activities that we do here in the Yukon, making tools, tanning hides, going hunting and trapping. So anything kind of traditional that brings young people or anybody really back to the land and reconnecting with who they are and where they come from is kind of our, you know, goal, aspiration, and something that we're passionate about. And it's an ongoing joke with my friends and people. Like Duran gets paid to be an Indian. So I get paid to wake up and, you know, go do a sacred fire for the community or go do a drum workshop or go speak and help young people and advocate and support, mediate, help in any way. And so, yeah, like it's my life. It's not even a job for me. That's one thing that I do. And then I run two other businesses as well on the side. So build tiny homes. We have a plot of land and then into real estate. So sell homes, buy homes, rent them out. So there's a lot of stuff going on around this house. Yeah.
Yeah. I like every time we were, because we've been planning a podcast episode for a while and then I just completely forgot. But like we already talked about this, like we're both on the same page in a sense that like we believe everything happens for a reason. So it wasn't the right time. Right. And I appreciate your patience because I was, we are having potlatch in the fall. So we're kind of closing up the grieving grounds for my grandma, and at least in a ceremonial capacity. And so I haven't been like in the best headspace to host people at all. Like, and just as like an aside, I don't want to make this about me, but like I recently had somebody cancel their membership for the Ghost Mind Yourself community, which is totally fine. Like 100% okay. I don't believe that. I honestly, the best way to support the podcast is to just like share it, talk about it. But she had canceled her subscription. And then in the reason, which I didn't realize that Buy Me a Coffee required a reason, but she wrote that like, you haven't produced anything in over a year. And I was like, well, that's just rude. I have, but also like, excuse me, like you can just leave and not be rude. Like I'm grieving. Like, what the hell?
It's content. So,
right. I was like, well, excuse me. Like I'll work a little bit harder while you cry over my grandma. Like Jesus. Anyway.
So am I like your first in a while?
What's that?
Am I like your first guest in a while?
You know what? I had Raven and Sage Lassert from Moosehide Campaign on yesterday, but you were supposed to be my first interview. And then of course, like, you know, we've had to kind of postpone it, but yeah, we're just getting back in. And it's, it's funny. Cause it's like these two interviews, this one, and then having the two sisters from the Moosehide Campaign on, they've just been like so healing in a sense that I'm just like, like you get good laughs, you know, when you're with the right people. So again, like timing is always right. You just have to wait a little while. But
timing is definitely also like, you know, in terms of grief, I had the same thing too. I was dealing with different forms of grief after my daughter had leukemia, came back, and I wasn't the same. I had a lot of trauma fatigue and I was jacked up. But everything that I was doing that I loved was not enjoyable. And I was fearful of that, not just in terms of giving myself, not showing up for others and something that I want and like a passion about, but it just wasn't being joyful for me. And it was so hard to take that plunge. The last one was going on the land. I was like, I do not want to go on the land, and the land becomes something that I don't like. And I had so much fear. But the thing that I love the most and the the most like connecting and open way to express myself and be part of land or whatever it is. As soon as I started doing it, I brought it right back. And that's what it sounds like is happening for you. I think, you know, you're not only interviewing people and learning and providing so many others with an opportunity to hear different stories and ways of being, you know, it's healing for yourself too. And that's why I do my work too. I'm like, I'm exhausted, but I keep doing the work. And it's not only does it deplete the cup, it fills it up 10 times more in different ways, you know? So.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's one of those things where, like, if you force it too soon, I had a feeling that if I kept going at the pace that like I had initially set for myself, like I would have just grown to like hate podcasting and just the anxiety of like getting on a microphone. I was like, I can't do this. And then, yeah, just kind of waiting for like the right time, the right people. Now it feels significantly better. But yeah, I 100% agree. Like you have this this apprehension because you're like, I know that I love this thing, but if I do it when I'm not in a good headspace and I have a bad experience, then it's going to reinforce like, I didn't want to go do this anyway. And like, this is why kind of thing. So yeah, just it's been a long year now. I'm like, yeah, I finally get to talk to some cool people. Not to say that like, you know, my family isn't cool or anything.
Just real res, have all the dogs in the background barking.
I didn't even hear them.
I gotta turn it on. I gotta close the window.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I live right by a highway and I just recently switched the podcast setup where I used to record in like our living room area. And now I'm like, I want to be at my desk. I want the sun. Like I just, you know, I just want a new setup that felt better. And, so now I'm right beside the highway and it's like, you hear like ambulances going by and like fire trucks and stuff. And you're just kind of like, okay, like just mute myself for a second here. But yeah. So, okay. So we introduced you and we're talking about kind of like how, like, or what you do in terms of like how you got started. Like you had mentioned that, you know, you're sober now and, that amazing story about like your company name being your sister's name. Do you have any sort of path that you like, do you want to talk about like how you went through that? Because like for cultivating safe spaces, that I largely learned about that from not my own personal sobriety journey, but like my healing from family members having alcoholism and stuff like that. So like, I had Peter Not So White on, we talked about sobriety. If you wanted to take it in that direction, like I'm more than happy to hold space for you so that you can talk about like your journey to get to this work, or we could potentially just jump right in and start talking about the programs that you have.
Yeah, we can talk about, I think it's like my goal and anytime I kind of do a podcast, I've done a bunch of podcasts and I still do a lot of speaking engagements and stuff, is like in the back of my mind, the way I work through expression is always having the thought that a young person that might need to hear certain things might be on your podcast. So in that regard, I would probably, yeah, I'd be more inclined to kind of express how it started. So young people know that there is a way, not necessarily the sobriety, because the sobriety point's not the end all be all, you know, it's more, there's a way to do traditional work or do work that reconnects you to the way that our ancestors lived, that's possible to live in this day and age, you know? And that's one of the biggest things that I try my best to advocate for, is academia and school and institutions are not the only route to be successful or honor yourself in terms of what this world is dependent on, you know, society norms. So yeah, I can start talking a little bit about that journey. And I do want to clarify too, because when we start talking about sobriety, I find myself getting a little triggered, because I'm just like, I guess it's more of like a check mark, but it's more of like an identity thing, you know? So when I was traveling around years ago before I had my children, I've been kind of homebound since I had my girls. They're 5 years old now. Is like, they're always like, whenever I get on stage in front of a couple hundred people, they'd be like, oh, this is Daron Fox intro. He's a sober First Nation person from the Yukon. And I'm just like, what? That has nothing to do with it. I've never counted days. It's not been a part of like, it's not a part of my identity. I guess that's my point. You know what I mean? Sobriety is not a part of my, And I made a point of expressing that. It's like, if you choose or you have the ability to deal with the trauma and stuff that's in your bones, that's not even because of you in your life or things that you've gone through, yeah, that's a gift. And, you know, people need to be proud of that for themselves rather than externally. And it's amazing and beautiful. And I hope that a lot more of our people or anybody, not even just our people, you know, reach out and find sobriety. And I find that like a lot of our young people in our generation are starting to become sober and make those decisions. So I don't want sobriety to be an identity thing. It's just like, be sober to honor yourselves, your family, community, and the things that mean the most to who you are and where you come from. So I just wanted to express that little note. You know, I'm happy that I'm sober, but you know, it's not who I am. So yeah, just wanted to note that.
Yeah, I love that. No, it's very true, because so I've, again, how much can I make this about myself? I've never done drugs or, well, okay, all right. I mean, I'll tell you afterwards, like, I accidentally got like high as fuck on THC cookies. I was high for 3 days. I'll tell you about it like when we have like time, we're not recording, but it was literally a nightmare. I thought my roommate was a lizard person. It's just like, holy shit. But yeah, so I've never been drunk. I've never drank alcohol kind of things, but it's not really something like it never occurs to me that that's like a part of my personality or my life or anything like that, because it's just like, I've been trying to deal with the trauma, the intergenerational trauma, first of all, like you said, like blood memory and things like that. But then also the things that I went through, I've been trying to deal with it my entire life, like through a traditional lens. Like I'm very privileged to have been gifted with a lot of tools from like my aunties, my uncle, that I've been trying to put to use. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I am in counseling now and I'm very proud of that. But like, yeah, I love that you brought that up, because it's not just like the sobriety element, which is like, oh, I'm 9 years sober kind of thing. And everyone's like, yay, kind of thing. It should be about something outside of that, the accolades and things like that. Right. And then also not to diminish people who slip up, right? Like people who accidentally, maybe they're going through something and then they turn to what has historically made them feel at least numb, right? So anyway, okay, thank you for that note, and then go for it. Let's talk about like how you got here.
Yeah, so I was born here in Whitehorse, and then I had a medical issue as a young person, so we ended up moving to Vancouver. So I ended up living in Vancouver till about the age of 8, and that's where my father was. So my father's from Saskatchewan, moved to Vancouver, and my mom and family, basically my mom wanted me to be a part of my father's life, because he traveled a lot, and he was actually a pipe carrier medicine man in our way. But he had some problems with drugs. He had some problems with alcohol. He was in residential school. A lot of brutal shit went on with my father as a young person, as a lot of that generation, our past generation, has, you know. So I ended up living in Vancouver for 8 years, and then my father passed away when I was 8 years old, and then we moved back to the Yukon. So within that time, you know, there's so much beautiful stuff of like getting into a Chev van and traveling with 10 of my family members across North America, powwow, and to, you know, learning my sweat lodge teachings, to Sundance, to, you know, doing my vision quest in the Black Hills, to doing a lot of things growing up when living down there. Used to fancy dance and hoop dance, used to do all those things. And then as soon as my father passed away, my mom couldn't handle being down there, and we all came home, and things kind of went downhill after that in terms of a lot of not very good stuff in terms of my mom, influence, alcohol, drugs, stuff like that. So throughout my life as a young person, as a lot of us have as Indigenous, you know, the past generation were unable to give us life skills. I didn't have any teachings on boundaries. I didn't have any teachings on self-respect. I didn't have any teachings on how to take care of myself. And that's what some of the work that we do now is, to try to help the younger generation learn what life skills is and taking care and managing yourself. So When I grew up, I went through a lot of like physical, emotional, sexual abuse as a young person, as a lot of, you know, a lot of us have. And yeah, I was a very angry young person. So throughout that, I started smoking weed and drinking at a one-digit age, like 9, 10 years old, started really young, and it just grew into more. Went to school, actually was really, really good in school. I can focus. That's the thing with me, is like I'm really focused and I'm really driven. So when I was a young person, my business sense comes from just wanting to make money. So I was always like taking a couple kids and going up to the rich part of White Horse, Copper Ridge, and then just knocking on doors and shoveling yards and telling them, you pay us what you think it's worth, which they'd give us money. That's kind of how it all started. And I grew up selling drugs, not heavy, hard drugs, but like hallucinogens, from pounds of weed to ecstasy, mushrooms, just hallucinogens. And I never wanted to sell that hard stuff since I knew my sister did that. My sister used to OD a couple times every year, and I used to be there taking care of her. So grew up in that kind of, that's a little bit of an overview of kind of like my life growing up. Always messed up on something. Pretty much all the drugs that I named all at once, all the time, drinking. And I was a binger. So I grew up with my mom, who worked with Indian Affairs, federal government, drank a 2-6 every night and woke up in the morning, went to work. So I grew up learning functional alcoholism. And that's kind of how what I adapted to and what I thought was okay. Even though I drank on the weekends and even drank on weekdays, I still went to school. I still did my shit. I still was like, you know, as long as I get my stuff done, it's okay. And I never thought of it as like alcoholism or a negative thing. So when my older sister passed away, when I was 16, turning 17, graduating from high school, I was going to go to university down south in Saskatchewan. I was going to do for law. And then my older sister passed away and my mom went downhill. So I had to make a choice. I had a younger sister named Jasmine, either go to school or stay home, take care of my family. And as you know, Indigenous people are fiercely loyal to family. So I decided to stay home. I knew it would destroy me, but it was a necessity for my little sister and family around here. Stayed here. My mom left for a few years and then I had to go find her. I literally had to search and find her. And I found her down in BC and brought her home. I didn't like force her or anything. I just told her what was going on, how we missed her and what was needed. And she came home and sobered up. She sobered up, but decided to, I needed to take care of me. So I started traveling the world. So I backpacked around the world for a couple of years and yeah, drank most of the time, 60 after 60, destroyed my liver as a young person before, you know, 20s into my 20s. And yeah, that's where it came from. I got a job with this big company. This big company selling like overstock product, and I was making like over 130 grand a year. And as a young person, so I had everything that I wanted. So I'd work my butt off, and then I'd get a couple weeks off, and I would just binge. And I wouldn't eat food, wouldn't drink water. Just 60 after 60, I don't sleep. I've had insomnia since I was a kid. And yeah, did that for a while. And you know, I remember sitting down in my house with my entire family one day, family, friends, colleagues, people that I love the most in this world. And I'm just sitting there. I still remember like it was yesterday. I was like, I feel alone. I was like, how the fuck do I feel alone, surrounded by everybody that I care for and means the most in my life? You know, and I was missing like potlatches. I was missing ceremonial points. I was missing milestones for family and friends. Because I was choosing to go out and drink and, you know, not take care of myself whenever I had free time. And when I didn't, I worked. So yeah, that's kind of how it started. And then one of my best friends accidentally shot himself. And yeah, just a couple string of like passings in my family was just like kind of, you know, the dagger, where I was just like, and I ended up getting pancreatitis. And pancreatitis, I ended up like my liver was basically almost shot. And like I was getting jaundice, and I was like 21, 22. And that's when I was like, it's either I change now or I'm gone. And that's when I did like 10 months. I did 10 months of isolation in my house, sold basically all my stuff, hemorrhaging my savings. And yeah, that's kind of how it started. And that 10-month period, I was just like, I remember talking to my elders and mentors, because I couldn't remember any of my teachings. I couldn't remember any stories. I couldn't remember any ceremony. And I was like, I went through so much ceremony and stuff growing up. My elders would say, just keep taking care of yourself and they'll come back. And I remember like losing my mind of like, I can't remember things. I can't think of things. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm not going to be like this forever. And I remember my elders telling me, because when I first went, when I went from down south, Vancouver, learning those teachings on my Ojibwe side, and then coming up here, down there, their ceremony is like grouped. Their ceremony is like sweat lodge and Sundance and powwow and together. And it's there and it's clear and it's known. And when I moved up here, I'm like, where's the ceremony? And the elders up here were just like, our ceremony is you go on the land by yourself and you figure out how nothing you are, how small you are. So the teachings of humility, the teachings of empathy, the teachings of compassion, the teachings of the other things that you aren't necessarily focused on when you're down in powwow and down in sweat lodge and stuff. Those are different teachings. Those are different, you know, courage, you know, understanding, respect, you know, those teachings you're like embedded in the teachings down south. So when I was sobering up at about 10 months, I'm like, I'm losing my mind. What do? Go out in the land, you know, find out who you are, realize how small you are, how you're not special. There's a lot of people going through a lot of hard stuff that you're not special. And I remember 10 months, the 10 month period, I was sitting on a mountain. My uncle went hunting and I'm sitting there and I was crying my head off. And I still get goosebumps like talking about it. And I still remember the day like it was yesterday. And I just remember that point where I was able to like forgive myself for everything that went on in my life and the things that happened. And yeah, I wasn't a very good person growing up. And then I was able to forgive the people that hurt me. And that was the turning point for me. And I never thought I'd be in the work of youth. I never thought I'd be in the work of culture. I never thought I'd be doing anything. That was basically the opposite realm of what I was doing and what I'm good at. My gifts are being able to talk. My gifts are being able to communicate and understand. I've always been told my whole life I'm an empath and I can feel people and understand people and I connect with people really well. So my teachings from my elders were always like, as a young person, it's your job to figure out what your gifts are. When you figure out what your gifts are, where you have to give them away. And in the process of giving them away, you find out what your journey is. So I was like, my gifts are based, I can get money because I can talk. I can get money and work because I'm good at convincing. I can get money because I'm good at planning. I'm good at logic. I have leadership qualities. So I'm like, how do I switch that into something that's healthy and community based? And you know, I want to be able to continue to do my culture and ceremony because I've kind of lost that. So that's when I was just like, I'm just going to start volunteering in the community. I'm just going to start helping be who you are when you're younger. You know, there's a couple of sayings that came up in Sweat Lodge that like slapped me in the face. And it was a different version of that, but it basically was that. It's the well-known one nowadays around the community, around everywhere. I was just like, I never had any mentors or men to look up to. I never had, you know, ceremony openness. I never had the ability to feel safe in environments. I'm like, well, if I never had that and these young people don't have that, I've got to create it. My goal was to like create space and to help young people not go through an ounce of how I felt growing up. I felt the most loneliest pain, you know, sitting in my room in pitch black in the corner crying growing up. There's a lot of stuff that I went through growing up and I don't want young people to go through any of that. And that's kind of how it started for me. So I ended up selling all my stuff and decided I was going to pursue supporting young people and supporting culture. This is when Stephen Harper was prime minister. There's zero money for culture, zero money for youth, zero money for anything. And my scope was small. It was just the Yukon. I'm going to help the Yukon. You know, I'm going to start helping the Yukon. So I traveled to every community in the Yukon, stayed for a couple months. And like learn culture, learn their connection, met their elders. And then I was just at the tail end of running out of money and like basically going to be done when I did a speech up in Dawson. And there was a lot of people from across North America that were there. And I did a speech on my journey. So they just asked me to talk about sobriety, to talk about spirituality, to talk about ceremony, to talk about, you know, stories. And I just went up there and did exactly what I'm doing now. I just talked real. Where I come from, how I feel, how I got here, what I value, and basically my way of being and how I want to move forward. And because of that, people from across Canada were just like calling me after and be like, hey, would you like to come to you know, Ontario and do a speech. Or would you like to come here and talk to some young people? And that's how it kind of snowballed. I was ready to stop because I was broke. Everything was sold. I sold everything I own. And, you know, like we just talked about at the beginning of the podcast, everything happens as it should. You know, you do good things for good reasons, good things come back. And that's what my business is like been. It's like, we're not doing things for money. We're not doing things for any other reason than it needs to be done. And so I started traveling across North America, doing speeches and helping where I could with some of the minimal knowledge that I had as a felt. And I started building partnerships and hired five guys, and we just started going to places that needed us. At Wapiskat, when that stuff was going on, suicides, we were called in to support communities. We paid ourselves through our heart fund. We take 10% of anything we make into a heart fund, and if the community needs us, we go out there and pay ourselves. So we just working in every facet that we were called to. And it's kind of how it started, and that's kind of how it went, and now we're here. So yeah, anyway.
That's like I wish I could remember which speaker I was watching, but I was watching a speaker series for Indigenous governance, the program at UConn U. And the guy who was speaking was talking about how he ended up where he was, and he was like, well, they needed a insert blank, so I became that, and then they needed a this, so I became that. And I was like, that is just the most Indigenous experience, just this like bouncing all over from place to place, and like, what medicine do you need kind of thing will provide it, right? Like I think about that a lot because I'm currently working in the school district, which is something that I love to do. But then at the same time, I'm like, it feels like that's not where I'm supposed to be right now. Like, I feel like I want to be doing other things and just bouncing around. And like, from a Western perspective, it sounds like very immature because it's like, oh, you can't hold the same job for more than a year. And it's like, yeah, but I'm not needed there. Like, I'm being called somewhere else kind of thing. So I love that. That's literally your story. It's like the most Indigenous experience. You just bounce all over the place where you're needed, right? And you do what you're needed to do. So for I feel like I'm stuck on the tiny house thing. Like, I remember when you mentioned that the first time, and I was like, I'm sorry, what? Like tiny houses? Like, do you, okay, before we jump into the youth stuff, can we talk about the tiny houses, please? I just want to know more about this.
Yeah. So the funny thing was, is like, I personally help a lot of, I've helped like probably six of my really close friends, not only kind of transition to getting sober and taking care of themselves, because it's all about timing, right? When you're ready, I tell all my friends this, I'm like, when you're ready to make that decision, I'm here to help you, and I'll jump on it. And I have, so I've helped a lot of like my friends and people close. I've also helped a lot of them become entrepreneurs. I'm an entrepreneur pusher. I'm like, you know, even though you're working 10 times harder, it's for yourself. You know, I'm 24/7. It's not like a 9-to-5, man. You know, I don't have weekends and shit, but I get to like make my own time. So, that's kind of how this happened. Cause there's even three more businesses right now as we speak that might be getting started that I'm involved in. So I'm just like, I got to figure out how to manage it. I'm doing really well right now in my personal space of like how happy and content and capacity wise and good. And I feel really good. And it's taken a while to get here, so I'm starting to push myself further. But yeah, the tiny home stuff was basically, it came about connecting with my older brother. So my dad, he traveled around a lot. And let's just say he has over 20 kids. across Canada, and I've met a lot of my brothers, and I've met a lot of my sisters. I think there's only a few brothers, and I talked to my older brother for about 20 years. He's the oldest. He's in his late 40s, mid 40s, late 40s, and we never met over 20 years. And then last year, he's like finally like, hey, I'm coming up. I'm in Fort St. John from Alberta, and I was like, dope. We're finally going to meet. And he came up here, and then we started talking and we connected. He's like me. We're exactly the same as each other. And we're the first time we've met like a brother from our father's side. And it was just trippy. And he's a Red Seal carpenter. So, and I'm always asked to do a lot of stuff in the community. And so I'm helping with like homelessness, and I'm helping with youth shelters and shelters going on in the Yukon, and then First Nation housing crisis. Cause I'm working in all the nations in the Yukon, and you hear a lot of the community members and elders speak on like, we don't have a place to live, or our house is crowded, or we have to figure out other ways. And there's so much like, you know, policy written and building homes, and a lot of places don't have like their land agreements done in their nation. So you can't necessarily go out and start building. There's all these little things. And I'm just like, what's the solution? You know, I'm trying to figure out like a out of the box solution. I'm just like, let's build tiny homes on trailers and we can do whatever the fuck we want. And these people can move them and live with them. You don't need all these, you know, things you have to follow when you're building a home. Let's just put solar panels on those mofos, throw some Indians in there, and they'll be happy, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
A truck. So it's like, you know, you gotta call an uncle, you can move your home. So that's basically how it came about. And then me and my brother clicked. We clicked so much that I was just like, hey, this has been an idea. Cause he was just like, well, I want to like move. I want to do better. Cause he was having a hard time with drinking and stuff. And then he came up here and he sobered up, and then we started a business. We got a plot of land out of town, but 20 minutes out of town, built a 24 by 24 shop. He built it. And yeah, we've just been collecting materials and picking up some trailers. And then we're going to start building trailers. So I have some friends that are plumbers and electricians, and I'm learning a lot about solar panels because I'm building my own house deep in the bush, 3-story home. So I've been researching a lot of different things that I want in my fully sustainable home away from society. So yeah, that's kind of how it started. And there's a lot of people that need homes. There's a lot of people that need a space to call their own that is, you know, not so burdened with costs, because like real estate and everything here is brutal. You know, we have a couple homes that we rent top and bottom, a little 3-bedroom bottom with one bath and like 2 parking. We have to charge like $1,850, you know? So that's just like Vancouver, man. Down in BC is brutal. So yeah, we're just trying to figure out a way to help community. It's all about community. And that's kind of where it is right now. We're getting young people that are taking carpentry programs at the university and asking them if they just want to go out in the bush, work their own hours and build stuff and, you know, sell them to communities and help people. So that's where it's at.
And that is like so cool, because you're hitting like so many different points. I like when we talk about, I list myself as an activist, but like largely I consider myself a sovereigntist, right? Like this idea that like we are still capable of being independent. We deserve to be independent, and, you know, depending on where you are and what treaties have been signed and stuff, like it kind of complicates things in some ways. But realistically, like sovereignty starts with the self, right? Like it starts with this ability to build capacity in yourself and then in your family and in your community. And it just keeps like rippling outward. And so when you're talking about the idea that there are like Indigenous students who are getting like carpentry or plumbing and stuff, and it's like, hey, bring it back to the community, right? Because like a large part of us recreating or maintaining sovereignty is the fact that like we have to prevent our youth from leaving, right? Like we have, because it's so hard to keep people in the community once they've had that like higher education and stuff. So few people want to come back, because quite often there aren't a lot of opportunities in our small communities. Because for people listening, like I also come from the Yukon, as you know, these are tiny communities. Even Whitehorse in and of itself is what, like 30,000, or it's about 30,000.
Whoa, we're not that tiny. Come on. Wait,
you know what? It's the perfect, no, it's the perfect size. Like we're niche. Right? I like to say you don't end up accidentally living in the Yukon. It's one of those things where like you make the choice to stay because it requires a certain level of hardiness to put up with like the winters, the darkness and all that stuff. And like, I say that as I'm in Nanaimo right now.
Yukon, we have so many people here from Ontario. We have so many people from everywhere. And the Yukon's known for 2 things. It's like you come here to visit or just to hang out or enjoy the wilderness. It's either you always want to come back when you leave, mm-hmm. or else you come back and never leave. That's
exactly.
You know? And we as Indigenous here, it's just like, yeah, come visit, but go home.
I know it's that, like, Eric and I were talking about this, the fact that, like, we as Yukoners can't afford to be in the Yukon because all the jobs that pay, like, the cost of living is extremely high, and all the jobs that pay to keep you there are being given out, like, outsourced to people from Ontario, Alberta, like government workers and things like that. So I love this movement of being like, you know what, fuck it. Like, we're just going to do it ourselves. We're going to make these houses. Like, the fact that, like, I'm on the tiny house train. Like, you have no idea. Like, this is something that I'm just like, oh, I love tiny houses. And I want a tiny house, but Eric is not into tiny houses. Right. So I'm just like, but the parameters are different. They're portable. Like, you can be on the land and you don't have to, like, sit here bringing all the electrical, the power lines and stuff to you. And like, it's just like, it opens up space for you to just, like, live your life kind of thing. You don't have to worry so much about, like, this, you know, the income taxes and things like that. Cause, like, you can just live on the bare minimum.
You're talking about personal sovereignty. I think this is time for you to choose yourself, Jen. I'm just joking.
You're like, buy one of my houses, Jen.
I'm good at selling. No,
I'll make you already sold me. Like, solar panels. I'm like, oh, really?
The
solar
panels. The sun.
Yeah, it's so indigenous too. Like, I just tying it back to, like our roots. First of all, our homes were always either, like, portable or fairly small, right? Our communal living spaces, like longhouse, big house, all those were, like, fairly large. But, like, we always knew that the most important things happened outside. So we don't need these, like, huge houses and stuff, because it's like all the important stuff is out on the land. Like, it's out under the stars. It's out under the sun. So really, like, what you need for a home is, like, just a place to, like, sleep and, like, house your things. Like, if you're, like, we talked about this, like, you have, like, trucks and stuff. Like, I'm not judging you, by the way. I want a bigger Jeep. I want all these stuff. But it's just, like, one of those things where I'm like, I need enough space to house my bike and, like, my desk and my working stuff and all my random hobbies. But all in all, like, I don't need, like, a bunch of spare rooms and things like that. Like, there's just more to clean. That's it. That's my actual motivation. I just don't want to clean a huge house.
Well, my rationalization and justification for having all these trucks and madness in a big house is, like, my mom's house was always the communal house.
Yeah.
Like, my whole of, like, 10 Indians at each time, and my mom didn't even know who the hell their parents were. And I was always cooking and stuff. That's how it always was. I was born that way. I love that. So my house is the community house. This is where we do, like, all the parties, you know, ceremony. This is where everybody gathers. And I have a 5-bedroom house. So I have family that come in from around the whole Yukon that come here to stay for whatever they need to here in Whitehorse. Or people, all my people from across North America that travel up here for work or just to visit, stay at my place. And then the trucks and stuff. My grandma was my biggest teacher, my grandma Effie. And when she passed away about 8 years ago, she basically, because I was kind of a minimalist too, you know, I was like, this is what I need. I don't need more than this. This is not respectful. When my grandmother was passing away, she basically made me promise. She said she had cancer and she suffered for a while, but she told me, she's like, you're the only one in the family that can bring us back to the land. So you need to promise me you're going to bring the family back to the land. So that promise was like, okay, you know, I got to get, you know, 5 trailers and 4 sleds and 4 quads and 6 trucks and, you know, all these guns and like 10 wall tents and build a camp, which I have now, massive camp for the family, is to build this capacity. So my family members don't have excuses. I don't want them to be like, I don't have any gas in a truck. Take my goddamn truck. I don't have a gun. Here's a gun. You know, you don't have a quad. Oh, look, I have another one there just for you. So there's no excuses in this madness. You guys are going to get your ass on the land. You want to sober up. You want to take care of yourself. You want to connect. There's no excuses. So, you know, it was a promise to my grandma, but it is overwhelming as hell. You know, cleaning, organizing, maintaining, it's madness. I literally have 12 sets of tires outside on my lawn being sold off marketplace, super indigenous, getting like, I got 10 messages while we've been on this podcast of like, hey, are these tires available? So I'm not even shitting you. That's like, that's what I'm doing right now. So it's not fun. I'm old as shit, dude.
No, it's funny because like as you're speaking, I'm like, you said the magic words, right? Like the parties are at your house. So like I don't need shit because I could just go over there.
Yeah,
you're the one who has it all. So you carry the burden for the rest of us.
You're the burden holder.
You're like, my back hurts from carrying all this weight to support me all.
Carrying the weight of my people. This hurts so much.
That reminds me, what is his, I don't know how to say like his Instagram or TikTok handle. It's like CHE and then Jim. So I don't know if it's like actually like a word or if it's just like Chi Jim. I'm not sure, but I don't know if you follow him. Do you follow him? He's the one who did the, oh my God. I'll show you him after, but he's the one who did the voice, the audio. What do they call them? Audio clip video. You know what I'm talking about. He made a TikTok with like a specific audio clip. And it was like, the clip itself was like, you're gay. You don't look gay. And then the person was just like, oh, I'm sorry. I'll act more like, but he did it so that it was just like, oh, well, you don't act like an Indian. And he was like, oh, okay. Just give me a second. And he like filmed himself. Like he like looks in the bathroom and he like, it shows like the shower head. And then he starts doing this like rain dance. And then the shower head starts going.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Just the way that you talk, sometimes it reminds me of like him. Like it's that good, like native humor, you know?
Dude, when we get comfortable, like I'm mouthy as hell and I'm just teasing everybody and shit. That's how people know me. When I'm in work, I'm mad professional. I'm not being mad profesh right now, but I always want to like social media stuff because like, I wanted to like tell stories and talk about teachings and do all that. And I just like, and I've been on so many podcasts. Like a couple of my friends are just started podcasts too. Like my friend Sky Dew, she just started one. Sky Dew with tea. It's awesome. But yeah, no, I've always wanted to like invest the time, but I just don't have the freaking time. And I have like, I literally have in my phone in the notes of like ideas, stories, situations, all that stuff. And I'm like, I'm poised to do it. It's just not right now. You know, I want to do it. And like the humor, the shit that happens on a day-to-day basis, like we had a film crew following shit. It's fucking hilarious, dude. You know, I'm getting a film crew for all of fall time to follow us around. We're going to have like 20 GoPros and stuff on the land. So I think that's going to be more traditional rather than just day-to-day life. But we'll see how it goes.
No, you know what you need to do? You need to create not like a reality TV show, but like you need to create like scenes that are like very clearly like not real or whatever, and then put them on TikTok so that it can like advertise for these programs and people hear about them and stuff like that. But like you could recreate like some really dumb scenes that are very clearly satirical or something, and that would be so perfect for social media. I'm in the same boat where I'm like, I have so many ideas for like videos that I can make, like the short TikToks and stuff with like information. And like I've even toyed with the idea of doing like podcast shorts and just clipping up like sections of my podcast and then putting it on TikTok or something like that. But I'm like, I'm so fucking busy. Like that's just, this is just me being like, I'm addicted to stress and I'm going to find more things to do. You know, I'm like, no. You chill out. You go through your grieving process. You stop like trying to distract yourself. Like, it'll come when it comes, like, you know, like when you're ready. But I hear you. I relate to you on that. I have a notebook full of like so many things that I'm like, this would be perfect.
It's like my youth and elders in my life. They're the ones like my elders and my accountability points with anything that I do in my life, decisions, you know, ceremony, whatever it be. But they're the ones that are pushing me because when we're on sacred fire doing medicine, there's no filming, there's no cameras, nothing like that. You're not allowed. But they're always like, you gotta start filming this shit, dude. You gotta start talking about this stuff. You know, even though we're losing all of our libraries right now, our elders are going, And it's hard to film and, you know, record that stuff for them to be comfortable. We have to start getting comfortable with doing that for our younger generations, because we're losing all that. And so that's kind of where it comes from for me, more like, and I want young people to be able to understand and learn things in like a more contemporary way that's actually, you know, I guess clear, you know, clear. And yeah, I'm very good. I'm very easy. It's easy for me to be vulnerable and open. I really don't give a shit. I don't care what people think. I got no shame. So I can say whatever the fuck I want, and no, nobody owns me. I own myself. So, you know,
yes, I love that.
Whatever I want, and people can go themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, like talking about shame and stuff like that, right? Like I've been unpacking a lot over the past few years. I've been trying to unpack a lot of my shame. Just, you know, like there's always like inherent shame when you're Indigenous. It's just taught to you, right? Like, and you don't realize that you carry this shame, because it's just part of like Canadian socialization that we don't see our faces in media. We do now, a little bit more, but I remember this one statistic, in 2019. And, it was that Indigenous peoples make up 0.01% of media representation. And so what that tells us is that we're not supposed to be here, right? That we should be ashamed of the fact that like we exist, we have all these stereotypes surrounding us and things like that. Right. So like, I've been trying to unpack shame culture for myself. I guess I started probably in like 2017, and it's so true. Like you're like, nobody owns me. Like I own myself. I'm like, yeah, I have no problem telling people like embarrassing stories about myself, because it's just like, well, once it's out there, like you can't hold it over my head. Like I don't care. It's not a secret.
And I really don't, at the end of the day, like even at like the height of my business, like I have a big thing where I don't like, you know, accolades or awards or anything like that. I've been offered a lot even this year already. And I'm like, I don't want them. Give them to somebody else. Give them to a young person. Like a lot of that stance, disconnects me from my work with young people. They look at you differently. And if you can't be open about things that are happening to you and not have any shame with it, you know, without any consequence, because a lot of that, yeah, affects your relationship with young people and your connection. Because I remember that when I first, like years ago, was like a height of a lot of the stuff that I was doing, was getting a lot of attention. You know, it changed the view of the youth that I cared about the most. And that's the consistency and stuff that I needed with young people. It was like, that's how they trust me. That's how I can help them. But when I started coming, when I was like working with youth and these ones that I'm committed to and there for them, they looked at me different, and they weren't, you know. So I would rather not get any of that stuff and just be open about everything that's happening in my life, to keep that consistency of like young people trusting me and the people that I harbor and help, because this shit's not about me, man. You know, I love what I do, but it's not for me. Yeah. That's where my mind always goes when I talk about that stuff, because random people that are around circle and stuff hear me talk about my own life and things that are happening. And like, how the hell can you just talk about that? Mm. It's like, because it's not me.
Yeah. That, the idea that like what you were kind of talking about earlier, the idea that there might always be some young person listening who needs to hear like what you have to say, right? And so I try to bear that in mind as well, more so, and I guess like to bring it closer to home. So I told you I co-parent 4 kids, right? With my brother and his wife. They're amazing kids, and they completely like changed my life. The moment that Pepper was born, our oldest, I didn't think, like I thought I knew what love was, you know. And then, you know, I got to hold her for the first time. But everything that I do at this point in my life, it largely turns back on how can I prevent her from having the same struggle that I had, or the boys too, right? And like, I try to be very open and honest about like my mental health struggles and like different things like that, because I want I want there to be that established space where it's like, there's nothing off limits. Like if there's something that you're dealing with, you're safe here. Right. And so I've tried really hard to bring that into the podcast space as well. Just kind of being like, yeah, like I suffer from serious depression. I have agoraphobia, like all that great fun stuff. And I'm like, guess what? I'm still pretty fun. Like I'm still a pretty cool person and you can be too. And so I like that idea that it's like, yeah, we're all human, right? And every single person who is kind of like, I should just say every young person, but that's a generalization. Most young people, like they don't really have a lot of life experience in a sense that like they don't have the hindsight. So when you have somebody who can mentor you or who can kind of like be upfront about the fact that like, yeah, I went through shitty stuff, right? And it traumatized me and I'm working through it. It takes a lot of the burden off of that person. They have the ability now to enter that space authentically as well. Once they see that you've entered authentically, right? Like that's, I guess what it all comes back to, this idea of like working with youth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My daughters, it'd be funny if you did a podcast with them. They're the most unfiltered, crazy little twin deans you'll ever meet. Like Silif is the outgoing crazy one that'll jump in a pool or slap you in the face to get you out of like some mad thought that you're having. She did that last week. I'm like sitting here thinking and I'm just like, fuck. And I was just like going down a rabbit hole a little bit. Not even looking at my phone. I was just decompressing and she comes over and smacks me in the face and she's like, quit it. And she just walked away and kept playing. I was like, what the fuck? They're intuitive and they're just like, yeah. And that's was like, I wish I had that as a young person. I wish I had that ability to be safe and free. And I speak to my kids like adults ever since the day they were born. And they're strong girls. And just like you said, everything that I do and you yourself, you know, what you do is a reflection of what you want for them or what we wish we had, you know? So everything that I'm building is for my daughters. So yeah, they're hilarious, man. Those girls are going to do a lot of brutal shit when they're older. Everybody keeps asking me like, are you worried about the girls and the boys when they're older? And I'm like, I'm worried about the fucking boys, dude. These girls are going to be brutal. So I know it's dope. I'm like, yeah. They're unfiltered. They're like me, and my mom is the most unfiltered human being you've ever met in your entire life.
I love that.
So yeah, she's like the queen of no shame. She'll tell you to go off in front of everybody. And I love that woman. She's crazy. Yeah. For everything that me and my mom, you know, we've healed together. And when I sobered up, I actually like discontinued my relationship with everybody for about a year. And when I reestablished my mom, like I walked into her house and you can usually smell Grand Marnier and see bottles. And I walked in there for the first time after like a year and I sat down. I didn't see anything. And I was like, what's going on? Are you okay? What's up? And she's just like, she said, I don't drink anymore. I was like, how the hell did you quit drinking? I never thought you'd quit drinking. She's like, to know how much you drank, if you can quit, I can quit. You know? So she hasn't been drinking at all because I stopped, which is shocking. So. But yeah, she's an amazing woman. Yeah.
That's awesome. Does she, so we haven't really had a chance to like, you talked about like your brother being a part of the tiny house business. Mm-hmm. What kind of setup do you have in terms of like your family for these land-based camps and stuff? Like, have you been fortunate enough to be able to like pull your mom into these as well? And kind of like, how's that all going for you? How's that all working?
Oh man, it's like, it's all connected. So once I get a bright idea, everybody kind of just, you know, everybody always says it like I'm the one that brings people together. So I'm just like, this is what I'm doing. If you want to come, you're going to come. And people know that it's going to be dope shit doing Indian stuff. So they're going to come.
So, yeah, you can't turn down being on the land, right?
Yeah.
Like, why would you?
When I made that promise to my grandma, I drove in my quad, bought a quad. Just start ripping around my whole territory. I'm under the government of Kwanlunun First Nation. Don't really say that, you know. It's more of a government now. I represent my nations. But I started going around my whole territory that we have, Kwanlunun, and I found this spot way the heck out in Ibex. It's just like 2 hours out of town. So like 45 minutes down the highway, over an hour in bush, you know, you need a four-wheel drive truck to get out there. And then I claim the other side of the creek, the whole other side. So build a bridge that only I can access or my family. And so, yeah, just like as soon as I got the spot, and then I started bringing wall tents and started building like areas and stuff, and I would just bring people out. I'm really good at just what I'm really good at is not like being like, oh, come. I'm like, with my mom, I'm like, let's go for a drive. And then I took her out there, and then she falls in love with it. And some people, I'm just, it's easy to be like, hey, just let's go out to camp for like a night. They love camping. I'm good at knowing those things, so it's easy to get people hooked into that stuff. But the camp just expanded from family to friends to people coming from across Canada. Because when I started to travel and stuff and do more across Canada, I'm like, get your ass up here in the fall time and come on the land. So I have a lot of people at every fall time from across North America fly up, and they spend a week or 2 weeks or whatever it is out of camp, and they live off the land. No cell service. We get to go hunting and trapping and live off the land and fishing and campfire and all that good Indian stuff. So yeah, that's basically it. My life is my work. My work is my life. I don't even like to call it work, to be honest. I just meld everything. There's no point in separating stuff. So
yeah, I 100% agree. It's kind of going back to what you said earlier, we were talking about like being an entrepreneur and this idea, like it's known, like people are like, oh yeah, you quit your 9 to 5 to, you know, to work Sunday to Saturday kind of thing. And it's like, you absolutely do. But because it's something that, if you've chosen correctly, I guess, it's something that, as you said, it fills your cup at the same time, right? And to be fair, I do burn out. Like I'm not, everybody knows that at this point. Like I've had multiple podcast episodes where I'm like, I'm burned out, need a break. But it's interesting because it's like, I can't not do it. Like I have to write, I have to podcast, I have to do this like decolonizing. I predominantly do decolonizing education, but it's, as you said, like, as you know, it's very heavy work. Like you're constantly dealing with not only like your own trauma, but other people's trauma too. So it can be really hard on your body and your mind, your spirit, your heart. Ouch, I just smacked my headphones. Yeah, but it's cool to me, like hearing that people come from all over the place to be at this camp. Cause I'm like, that people think that land back is like this scary thing, right? That we're going to like boot people off this landmass, off Turtle Island, that we're get out of here kind of thing. That's really not what land back is about. That's not what sovereignty is about. It's literally about us being able to live our lives in the way that we want to, and the way that we traditionally would if we had that option. Like not everybody, we're not saying everybody has to give up cell service or anything like that, but the option to be able to be like, we live off the land, we have the knowledge to do so. It's not fucking illegal, right? Like the fact that like the Canadian state and the provincial governments and territorial governments try to have such a chokehold on people's sovereignty, like just literally your ability to be like, hey, I'm gonna go live out in the woods, I'm done kind of thing, and that's somehow illegal. You know, I'm like, why?
You just like sweat, you start talking about this, you're just like,
this really riles me up when I talk about like land back, and people are like, what even is land back? I'm like, just, oh my god, it's not that hard. It doesn't mean we're kicking you off, right? It means like, come join us, and like, we want these amazing opportunities to like hunt fish beyond the land and like tan our hides and do so like without having to fight for that, you know, or like justify that, make decisions about like how the land is used too, right? This and in the Yukon, like heavy tourism, heavy mining and stuff like that. So in currently where I am, like on Vancouver Island, it's timber, like BC, all of BC, it's timber. And for people who don't know, like BC is, they call it the BC question, right? Because like BC was just kind of like annexed unofficially. There were like the Douglas treaties, but they aren't even honored by the Canadian state, and they're not honored by BC. So all of the treaties that need to be signed would be considered modern treaties at this point. And it's just kind of like this big open gray area where it hasn't been legally decided who owns this land, but we know as Indigenous peoples, like it's not ownership, it's stewardship, right? And we have a requirement. It's literally like our duty, our responsibility to take care of this land. And then we have to go through all the like legal jurisdiction and try to be like, yeah, actually, like we're proving that we've been here pre-contact exclusively, And even that's not true, right? Like, we co-stewarded a lot of areas and we moved around in between like our various within a nation, right? We moved around between various spaces for like, let's say summer camp or like moose hide camp. Like, they're not going to be the same in a lot of places. Anyway, I'm completely derailing. I have like a podcast where I talk about borders and stuff. And like, I feel like I could do like 50 more of them alone. Cause I'm just like, gas, land back.
Yeah, no, like, you ever want me to jump on that stuff? Cause you're getting me amped up. My partner is actually, she does a lot of stuff in climate action. She just did this UConn fellowship for climate action. And they just had like this, they just did their graduation and have like these, they have like their paperwork that they're doing across around the world and stuff. So I've always been part of like climate action, climate change, you know, advocacy and support and stuff. And there's so much that's going on. And when you started talking about land back, I've heard different definitions of what land back means across North America, especially here in the Yukon. It's different discussion, right? And it's always different, just like Two Spirits, the meaning for Two Spirit is different everywhere you go. You know, it's dependent on the history and teachings and stuff like that. But yeah, I would love to do that. I talk about that madness all the time. And I think for me in the Yukon, and like, it's just like what you're saying, it's about land stewardship. As long as we, you know, cohabitate with the land and cultivate the land and take care of it like we used to, you know, we used to do on purpose burns. Now we have like forest fires all the goddamn time. You know, we used to do things on purpose to help the land so that it helps us. And, we, you know, there's so many different ways of being. And yeah, climate change is changing everything. Our permafrost levels are going up. Migration patterns of animals that had the same migration patterns for over hundreds of years, according to our elders, are changing now in the past 20 years. We have so much invasive species here in the Yukon that's not from here. That's scary for our like moose and caribou and populations and stuff. Like, yeah, there's so much stuff. Yeah, you get me amped up, you know. and to be clear, right, too, I've burned out multiple times, dude. Like, no matter what, the cup gets full. We are human beings. I have collapsed, and everybody tells me all the time, "You do way goddamn too much to run." All my elders tell me that, like. Like, that's going to, and they say that too, like, after they tell me, like, you need to slow down, take care of yourself. And they're like, what the hell am I even saying? Like, you're not going to fucking listen to me. You know? And then we're gluttons for punishment, but it's purpose. That's what it is. Everything you're talking about, it's a purpose. And that's what a lot of people, you know, we got to check our privilege. We're very privileged and we don't necessarily see it that way. Like, when I'm sitting here bitching, like, oh my God, I had this to do. I got this to do. I got this. And I'm like, this is dope shit. I get to help people. I get to, like, people dream of this shit. You know, I got to check my goddamn privilege all the time. So, yeah.
Yeah. It 100% is like that. Like, whenever I feel like I'm like, oh, I know I'm complaining about this, but like, I have like my dream jobs. And it was so interesting. Like, just kind of as an aside, sorry. I was helping to host the, they call it the QSA, the Queer Straight Alliance, at John Barsby, which is one of the schools that Learning Alt is. So I work at a few different schools, and one of them is the Learning Alt portion of John Barsby, which just basically means that I get to work with all the kids. This is like their last ditch effort to keep these kids in school. And then same thing with my other school, which is Island Connected, and they're a hybrid school. So some of the students come in and some of them are only online, and we're trying so desperately to just keep them connected so that we can get them graduated, right? And so I was helping to host the QSA at John Barsby, and they were like, okay, we're all going to introduce ourselves and then let's talk about, you know, what would your dream job be? And I was like, I mean, I'm doing it. Like, I can complain 1,000 times because I'm tired. The reality is I'm tired, but I'm not complaining because I don't like what I do. Like, I'm complaining because I like to complain and I'm a complainer. I don't know. I'm just a little bitch.
At least you said it before I did.
Right? It's just what it is. Like, I love my job. I love my job. My job's, because I'm like you, I'm just like add a stone kind of thing. And soon I'm going to have like a huge rock pile. But it's so funny because, like, if you had asked me, let's just say even like 3 years ago, like if I could handle this workload, I'd be like, absolutely not. No, I would never be like, oh, I'm a podcaster now. And I'm also like a freelance writer. And I also work for a consulting company. And I facilitate workshops for like the government and the school district. And it sounds insane, but I'm just like one day at a time. And I love every single one of them. I don't want to quit any of them. In fact, give me more.
God. Yeah, we talked about this at we just did the youth, a big youth gathering for all the youth from around the Yukon, building a strategic plan on like points to put towards government for funding to support more youth initiatives. I did a 4-day fire. We did a whole gathering, but we were talking about this too. Cause I was like, it'd be easy for, I can retire right now if I want to, and I can go live in the bush. You'd never goddamn find me. And I would love it. I'm an omnivert. I love being around people, but I need to be by myself. And if I was by myself in the bush with my kids, like the world can go fuck itself. It can blow up for all I give a shit. But it's a response. So when I'm saying this with like 75-100 people sitting there while the other ones are inside, they're all like, what the fuck is going on here? Then I'm like, I have a sense of responsibility. My time is not done. You know, I feel like, and I've always said it since day one, started my work. My job is to, you know, work myself out of a job. I want to build capacity in communities and mentor young people so I don't have to do this shit. It's not that I don't want to. It's just like, you have young people, you have people, let's do this shit. That's our way. I'm working myself out of a job. So like, it's a responsibility, man. And yeah, I love it, but I would rather be in the fucking bush hunting and, you know, not showering, mad fucking four hair beard, really, really long.
The four, you know? The four little beard hairs.
We don't grow mustaches in the Yukon. It's just four long, it just go in the wind.
They're so sparse and sad.
Oh my God.
It's so true though. Like I remember, everything when you're ready, right? Like you were speaking about like having your friends, when they're ready to be sober, when they're ready to get help, like you can't force anybody. What do they say? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, kind of thing. Right. So I have this, longing to go back to, okay, I should backpedal a little bit. So I think I told you, so my brother Cole, he was run over when he was 16 and he lost his foot in it. Yeah. Yeah, Cole.
That dude?
Yeah.
I know that chick too.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's crazy.
I know. Oh, bro. Oh.
Yeah. But yeah, we're not going to. So he lost his foot. And then ultimately that amputation didn't work. He lost the lower portion of his leg. And in the time frame of between when he got run over and when we started school again, because this happened at the very end of the first, the very beginning of the summer. And then he was medevaced to Vancouver initially, and they were trying to save him because he lost two thirds of his blood. And the only thing that really saved him was this happened outside the house of a paramedic who happened to know how to tourniquet. And so this paramedic tourniqueted his leg and got him to the hospital, and then they medevaced him. And so I still remember, it felt like a dream. Like I was sleeping, and then like my parents came into my bedroom and they were like, we have to go. Your uncle Robert is here. And then we'll be back when we're back, kind of thing. And they drove, we were living in Watson Lake at the time. So they drove all the way to Whitehorse. And my mom got on the medevac with my brother, and my dad eventually came back, but he was so you can probably hear people love to speed by our condo. He was so traumatized by the entire event that he wasn't able to care for my brother and myself. So I have two brothers and one sister, and my eldest brother is the one who got run over, and my second eldest is my best friend. And so he did like what he could. He found a moose camp in Northern BC that is still on my mind. At the time, I had a miserable time because we didn't know if my brother had died or not. Like there wasn't any, there were no calls in and out to this moose camp. And we were there for a good chunk of the summer. And I think the last month, like in August, was when we finally like got out, and we were like, okay, like we get to see Cole, he's alive and all this stuff. So it completely ruined the experience for my brother being on the land, he hasn't gone back since. Like not specifically to that moose camp, but just in general, he doesn't camp, he doesn't do anything. And I remember at the time I was miserable as well. And I had the most horrific time, but I wasn't like ready for that experience, like being like fully thrown onto the land and being like, okay, like we have a generator. We don't have like actual electricity. We have one of those camp showers where it's like freezing cold water. You just like soap up and then really quickly rinse off and like try not to wash your hair kind of thing. And now that I think about it, like now that I'm further along in my healing journey and really wanting to be back on the land, I know that if I had gone to that camp, like let's say this summer, instead of the summer that my brother was run over, what a difference that would make, you know, like just the being ready to be there and like learn the lessons and like learn the teachings and actually like participate. So this idea that like you have these camps for youth, I'm just like, this is so fucking cool. Like it's so cool because I feel like, just to kind of pivot a little bit, like not really, it's still the same thing. It's all the same. There's this understanding among our elders that like we need coming of age ceremony, right? Like the fact that we are trying so hard to build capacity and we're trying to bring our youth and our kids back to our elders. And there's this huge disconnect for a lot of us, because even people who are, you know, like our parents' generation or older, who were removed from our communities or their families, this disconnect from we don't know like what we're capable of anymore, right? Like kind of tying back to what I said about like sovereignty starts with the self. So many of us don't have that self-efficacy. We don't have that self-confidence because we haven't been kind of like stepped up at different levels in terms of like coming of age ceremonies. And like, I've heard that coming of age ceremonies, like you started preparing when you were four. And so when we became adults, traditionally, like we didn't feel out of place in our communities. And that's a whole other conversation to have in terms of like cultural separation from intergenerational trauma and like the creation of like essentially cultural amputees from residential school. But a lot of us just in general don't have a lot of self-confidence because we haven't been presented with these chances to prove ourselves on the land, right? Like whether that's like your first hunt or like for some people, your first hide that you're tanning and like different things like that. Do you guys have like coming of age ceremonies for youth, but then also for adults? Like what does that look like? Do you guys have anything like that?
It's funny to talk about this because I've done this work everywhere across North America and it does happen. And it happens in different ways, not necessarily because we don't use a hierarchical system in our way across indigenous culture around the world. It's more stages. We work in stages. So this is where you're at as a young person. This is where you're at here. This is when you can learn this ceremony, you know, and that's why our elders can't record something or, you know, record teachings and stuff, because a teacher to a young person, like I can teach two young people, I can mentor them. And start at the same time, but one's going to be, you know, this over here and one's going to be further. That's just how it is, depending on who they are, depending on where they're at in their life, depending on how open and curious they are. So a lot of our teachings and a lot of our ways of being in terms of that are based on that stage system. That coming of the age stuff that we have. And like I was saying it earlier, is like we were always taught to find out what your gifts are. And then in the process of giving out your gifts, you figure out what your journey is. So that's when you become an adult. That's when you know what your purpose is when your gifts have cultivated a journey that is in service of others in your community and your people. In our ways of being in all indigenous, you know, nations, is we used to do everything in our life for respect and honor. You were respected and you were honored for who you were, what you did, and why you did it. And that was the currency. That's who you were. Now it's built on, you know, power and control, which is the total opposite. So in our way, like and this is funny because I talk about this, my youth gauge, because colloquial ways is like, you have to create an age. What's your youth when I first started? And I was like, I don't want to create an age, you know, but I had to. So I put 12 to 35. And then I was always getting questioned whenever I did work. It's like, why 35? Like, there'd be like these little kids, little young guys that are like 22 showing up, and they're like in suits, and they're like, I'm not a youth. That's disrespectful. Like, I'm 22 years old. I have a full life. I'm going to have my own place. And I'm like, you little piece of shit. This isn't about you. You know, that's awesome. You found your journey. You're an adult now, but there's 35, 36 year olds that are on the street right now that don't know what the hell they're doing tomorrow. You know, so that stage system and coming of age and stuff is more based on where you're at and where you come from. And it's recognized within the people that are in your circle. So our kind of coming of age ceremony per se is not something that's put out to the world or a potlatch or something. Like, we used to do potlatch. We used to do different types of ceremonies to initiate different factors of stage of where you're at. But that was based on more of like your ceremonial stuff. So like with me, all my regalia has been earned through ceremony. We have no cultural standard now here in the Yukon or anywhere. Now people are just making their own ceremony. We're not traditional. I would consider myself like as traditional as I can be. You know what I mean? Like, I've earned all of my regalia. So when I see that Cree chief putting a fucking, you know, war bonnet or like a headdress on the Pope,
don't even get me started. I was so mad.
I lose my shit because I'm like, in our way, every feather's earned.
Every feather.
Yeah, so I'm just like, that's what I'm talking about. So it's a whole different discussion. Let's keep this.
We could go on about that. I lost my shit. And there were so many people I remember who were like in my Instagram, which I don't know if I told you. So I deactivated my Instagram for a little while. I felt like I was getting kind of lost in it. And I think if I reactivated, I might have like a community member or a team member run it, because I just like, just derails me. But I remember there were people in my Instagram messages who were like, well, he's allowed to wear it if it was gifted to him. And like, well, if the elders gifted it to him, then obviously it's okay. And I was like, okay, first of all, those are not my chiefs. So I don't give a flying fuck. Like, that it doesn't affect me. Okay. But it does affect me in a sense that, like, this is like Stockholm syndrome. Like, this is not, I'm going to derail this podcast. You can probably hear Finn. He's like, she's worked up. But like, it just, it made me so mad. And so many people were like, well, your chiefs gave it to him, so it must be okay. It's like, we are so many different nations across this landmass that, no, they're not my fucking chiefs. But even if they were, like, that's against ceremony. It's against, like, it goes against all of our teachings. Like you said, every feather is earned. Right? Like, you see people who have headdresses that have three feathers just kind of like out the side, and you're like, oh, they earned three feathers. It doesn't mean anything in terms of like, oh, I like these feathers and I'll just pop them in my hair. Like, they're so important. And like, oh, that made me so mad. Anyway.
Are these people that were messaging that, were they Indigenous?
You know what? One of them was, and then the rest of them were obviously white.
Did people smudge themselves?
I was like, I'll hold you in my smudge.
listen, fuck face.
Yeah, I have to be careful because like, so I'm trying to leave my replies to like, you know, like give it an hour, just think about it, because like, does it require a reply? Probably not. But then at the same time, I'm like, you fucking listen here. Okay. That's not my fucking chief. And if it was my chief, I would be pissed.
Even if it was, man, like these chiefs nowadays are elected officials. Yeah. They're government colloquial way. It's not something I honor. Every chief that we've had here in my nation, I call them by their first name, and they've never had the balls to tell me to call them chief. I'm just like, you're the person that I've known my whole life. So, you know, you're not hereditary. You haven't been raised as a baby. There's a lot of different ways. Anyway, yeah, that's kind of
we have very similar views in that respect, right? Just this like idea that when people are like, oh, that's your chief. I'm like, well, first of all, have you heard of the colonial band system? Because it's called the colonial band system for a reason. It's not ours. we elect somebody to interact with whoever happens to be in charge of like the Indian, well, it's gone through so many, I think it's called like Crown Indigenous Relations and Northern Affairs now or something like that, or I can't remember. It's gone through so many iterations, but basically just like the Indian Affairs Department, and you hire, you vote for somebody to represent you and to make sure, this is the thing, those chiefs are supposed to make sure that the Indian Act is implemented. So we're sitting here like, that's not my fucking chief. Like why would I care? Why would I care? Like he or she, I should say, they're just hired by the government to enforce the Indian Act, which is a literal colonial document designed to oppress us. So like, so they put a fucking headdress on the Pope. I'm not in support of this. Like, I'm not even in support of them. Like, anyway,
I had to stay silent for a couple of weeks because I'm like, throughout my work and knowing my responsibility and influence with young people, I used to be that angry Indigenous person where all these things would come up and I'd lose my goddamn shit. And I'm very opinionated. Like I said, we talked about this, no shame. I'm at a point now in my life where I'm just like, it's not that I'm not taking a stand or supporting or something. I think like I realized young that anger does not help and it's a waste of goddamn energy. It's just like, there's certain things to fight for and certain things you can't. And there, we have so many powerful Indigenous young people that are coming up that can take on that fight that have done it. You know, and I think we need to support those young people because my place is here right now. Maybe it's different somewhere else, but yeah, getting amped up. I got to calm myself down. I'm just like, no, you got, you can't put this energy here because where is it going to go? How is it going to support and help? You know, it's just like, so I'm like getting me all amped up.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because like I used to be like really hardcore. When Idle No More started up, I would say I was a hardcore person, like really anger fueled and stuff. Because like when Idle No More hit, I was just headed into university, and it was very eye opening for me because like my parents split up when I was fairly young, and my mom essentially removed us from access to my dad's family, but she moved us to Whitehorse and then just completely like cut off my dad's family. And so I went from having like being like encircled with my Indigenous family. My mom is a settler. And so I was completely removed from that and then placed into Whitehorse, completely new environment, afraid to be like, just to, you know, you want to fit in and stuff like that. And the people in Whitehorse at the time when I went to school and stuff, and as I'm sure you experienced, like there was no real Indigenous education. Like it's not like it is now, in a sense that like with UNDRIP being implemented in various locations, like, and the calls to action, there's a push for like us to be included in history accurately and represented properly and different things like that. Right. And so I learned a lot of shame growing up because I wasn't represented. And then on top of that, what I did learn was like really shitty things, right? Like the history books made us seem like we were so bad at everything. And it's like, no, we were incredible. Like we are incredible still. But this overarching narrative that Indigenous peoples required like white saviors to make Canada, right? That Canada is like the success of great white men kind of thing. Unpacking all of that in university, I was so angry, like just like, this is what they taught me kind of thing. And like, to be fair, like I acknowledge my privilege. I had at least 10 to 13 years, depending on where I was living at the time, with my Indigenous family. And so I have some of my teachings, but I'm still pissed that I don't have all of them. And that's part of my journey. Like I'm unpacking that, the shame culture and all that, and like accepting myself for like where I am and things like that. But it just, I remember when Idle No More hit and I was livid. And so I try not to go back to that place because like I remember just like how much it impacted my mental health. And at this point, so I'm 32 now, and I'm just like, you know what? I'm still pissed, but I don't have the space, like the actual like space in my schedule to be like how I am when I'm pissed. Does that make sense? Like I'm like, I can't let this impact me, because if it impacts me, I'm going to be down for the count for so long. I won't be able to do my job. I can't help anyone. Right. So I'm like, I've learned slowly that I have to kind of like you said, pass it off to people who have that skill of being able to like break down walls and stuff like that. I'm like, I'm the person who can talk to people. I'm not the one that should be like holding all of this like wild energy, because it just derails me. And then I go nowhere. It's unharnessed basically.
Yet. You're not there yet.
I'm not there yet.
Yeah. Just like your teachings are in your bones and yeah. You're where you need, you know?
Yeah.
The things that you can talk to young people about this all the time that go to university. I support a lot of them that go from like communities all the way down to universities. And it's like a culture shock, separation, anxiety, all that stuff. So we talk about reconnection or what they can do in little ways day by day. Language is a big one. You start speaking your language connects you to your ancestors. It's pronouns, it's verbs. English is the most selfish piece of shit language you can ever speak. So language is a big one, no matter where you're at. If you can't go in the bush, if you can't be with your people, if you can't hunt, practice your language and you're speaking your tongue of your ancestors and you're feeling the way that we feel. You know, it's one step at a time. And you have teachings, man. You're doing them right now. Your teachings are your ability to connect, understand, be vulnerable. These are gifts that a lot of people without purpose or without an understanding of self or where they come from to know where they're going have. So when you say that, you say that shit to yourself, pisses me off because I'm like, that's horse shit. You're where you need to be right now. You know,
like you're like, fuck you. You're cool.
I hear that garbage. I don't want to hear that garbage. You know,
yeah. I know it's, thank you for calling me out. It's one of those things where I call a lot of other people out kind of thing. Like I feel like, again, I'm in counseling now, so I'm unpacking this, but it's one of those things where like, I give everybody else so much grace, like so much to, you know, I'm like, this is your journey. Like you should be proud of yourself regardless of where you are. Like even just the fact that like there are Indigenous people out there who are just still alive. Right. Like that's who have been through so much. And sometimes it feels like it's too much. Right. And the fact that like you're still here is enough. It's literally enough kind of thing. And so I give so many people that grace. And then I'm so hypercritical of myself. And I know that. Like, so thank you for calling me out. Because I am. I know that. Like I know. And I'm trying to work on it because it's one of those things where it's just like you should be talking to yourself the way that you would talk to somebody else, right? Like ideally, how you would be talking to other people. But, you know, with respect, it's stuff, right?
But you also have to know your responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, have a platform. You have influence. You know, even, and I'm not saying hide yourself from being open and honest about things you're going through, but it is kind of like a realization of like, you got to honor where the hell you're at, you know, to move forward. Because yeah, I'm the same way as you. And I've been in therapy for over 2 years now after what happened to my daughter. And I've unpacked so much stuff. And the biggest one that my therapist always says is like, when there's a path that's easy, that's not easy, but like shows, you always go the hardest fucking way. And I'm like, I know, because I am stubborn as shit and I need to fucking suffer. I need to hurt for shit to like be ingrained in my fucking soul. That's how I am. And that's what I need. And I've always lived by this one saying growing up is like, the darkness restores what the light can't repair. And that's one that's always like been embedded in my spirit of like what I live with is like, yeah, the light and the goodness and the happiness and stuff, you know, helps and brings you back. But that being able to harness that darkness for teachings and for good things and for reminders and for accountability points, that shit has made me 10 times more of what I want to be in the future as an elder than anything else. So I'm like, I will suffer and I am bad with myself too. I'm like, you piece of shit. You know, even though they like this event goes fucking amazing, nothing's gone wrong. People are crying. People love it. I want to do more. I'm still like a couple of those things. I'm like, that pisses me off, you know? And that's just how I am. And yeah, I think it's like a rare breed or kind of like that, you know, just like entrepreneurs, man. It's rare because you're going to fail a million times, but you're going to succeed. It's a lot of alone time. Like, oh my God, am I doing something right? You know, this shit happens as it should. So, but yeah, no, I just wanted to say that in terms of like, you know, you're where you need to be. And I think we said this on one of the conversations we had before this is like, when you're ready and when you know, you'll be able to chase, pursue, and find ceremony or connection to the land that you've been driving for. Honor where you're at right now, and it's happening for a reason. It's happening because it should be. And that's what I mean, and that's where I'm coming from. And I think every young person needs to hear that reality. And I think me telling you that helps with that too, because they, even if they're in the shit, I'm not saying that it's good to be in the shit, but learn from it. And there's always people like myself or you or anybody else that's there to support in any way, shape, or form. We just got to be louder, I guess.
Yeah. We're like, we're here for you.
Oh, sorry. That's my alarm. It's the only alarm that doesn't scare my dog. And it's like, oh, and now there's like an actual motorcycle going by. So
you can't even.
Oh, good. Yeah. It's again, trying a new podcast setup. So I haven't edited the Moosehide campaign one yet. So I don't know if this is like how I want my podcast audio to sound or not. If these sound different than too fucking bad. It just is what it is. I find it's funny because like when you talk about like finding your journey, right? Like finding your gift, and then that'll kind of like reveal your journey and stuff like that. It's so interesting that you talk about that, because I never really would have considered myself somebody who would talk to people. And like, I'm great with words in a sense that like, I'm a fantastic writer. But I'm not nearly as good at speaking as I am at writing, but I'm very good at connecting to people. And so it's interesting, because even acknowledging that, in a sense that like, I didn't think I was going to be doing podcasting or facilitating workshops or anything like that. But once you find like what your gift is, and in terms of like mine, I guess it's communicating and connecting with people, all of a sudden, like you really do kind of discover your journey, and you do, I feel more like an adult. Like that's the funny thing is like, if you had asked me like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, like if I consider myself an adult, I'd be like, fuck no. Like I'm so incompetent. But I'm not necessarily any less incompetent now, but I'm like, I got the confidence now, I guess. Like, I don't know. I'm like, I know what I'm supposed to be doing. Like I finally figured out like what I'm good at, what I'm supposed to be doing. And even if it's not something that like ultimately makes me a lot of money, like I don't do these things for money. Like I just want to be able to pay my bills and like help people. That's really all it is. So I basically need a tiny house because I live in Nanaimo, and like this condo alone is 407 square foot. It's a studio condo, and it's $1,400 a month plus utilities.
Oh man, that's funny. Yeah, there's a lot. You're getting me thinking, man. Getting me rolling. Process.
We need a second podcast. Like we need to like do another episode, because so we've hit like the pretty much hit the 2 hour mark. And I want to be respectful of your time. And also like, I'm tired too. I'm also like an ambivert. So like, I love talking to people for like, I have to recharge though. Right. Like if I can't recharge, then I'm like a fucking mess. That's a whole story for like another day, as I like play with my like fidget toy. Do you see this? I've been squishing this thing the whole time. I hope it doesn't like pick up on the audio of like sloshing and stuff. It's one of those like water filled, squeeze toys for those who are listening. But yeah, I want to be respectful of your time. We are going to have to meet up again, because first of all, it's so much fun to just talk to you. Like there is no humor like native humor. You know what I mean? Like I just, when you get, I always tell people like if, when you find like an indigenous person, or if you like upset an indigenous person or whatever the case may be, like we just multiply, like we're so we're so like on each other's team. It's amazing for the most part. But I mean, people are on different journeys, right? So I'm like, it is what it is. But like, for the most part, like whenever you get like two indigenous people together, we just vibe. Like, it's just different, you know? It just hits different. Is that what they say?
Yeah.
Just the vibe hits different.
Yeah. No, I was just like thinking hard on what you were saying, you know? And the recognition point, because I'm like, that's something that my mind is very analytical going through different things. And I'm like, when did I feel like I became an adult? And I guess it was like my figure out my purpose and my responsibility. And then I just lived my life. And then the change and the recognition came from how people treated me differently, how people looked at me differently, you know? And yeah, so my mind's just going through that. So I appreciate you. I love these types of things. I have these conversations with colleagues and stuff across Canada that just blow my mind in different perspectives and stuff. And yeah, I loved it. And I really appreciate you giving me the time to be able to talk about engines diff and engine land and laughing and giggling and all that good stuff and telling horrible stories of me wearing diapers.
So, but that wasn't recorded. Like, so you're like selling yourself out now.
For the next podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you want to save that for next time? It's like dangle. What are they?
For the next one.
Yeah.
Our diapers.
Adult diapers and Norwalk.
Hell. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Okay. For 100%. Before I stop the recording, so I'm not ending the call or anything like that, but before I stop the recording, is there, do you want to list like resources for like where to find you or any kind of like closing thoughts that you have that you want to share with people? Like I just want to kind of open up the floor for like, if you feel like there's anything that you need to say or that you haven't said that you want to say, like it doesn't have to be on topic, just go for it.
There's always been a lot of these buzzwords of decolonization and, you know, colonial ways and westernized approaches and stuff like that. The biggest thing that we talk about in our circles with elders and mentors, traditionalists, connection, you know, people who talk about connection and ceremony, is just your way of being. And it's not your way of thinking, and it's your way of being. And that's something that one of my elders who just passed away, Shirley Adamson, she's like a second mother to me, always talked about that. You know, we can sit here and speak our minds and talk about the things that we think and speak from our hearts. But the reality of everything that's going on when we talk about reconnection and who we are and where we come from and finding what we were before and, you know, revitalizing stuff is just your way of being. And that's something that I always like to mention. And it's something that throughout this conversation has come up is like, when I was going through my shit in the past 2 years, everything that came up, I had to tell myself every morning, be who you want in your life. You know, you have to be who you want in your life. If you're going to be a piece of crap, whiny little dumbass, then that's what you're going to have in your life. And that's just how it is. So I guess the thing that I want to leave on is like, you know, you try to figure out your way of being and how you see things and how you reflect and things that you do, why, when, where, and how. And this is like a connection to not only, you know, cultural revitalization, whether you're a youth trying to figure out your journey or an adult or an elder or anybody, because there's still elders that don't know a lot of their culture and still feel confused. I came on this podcast to hopefully, you know, touch some hearts and talk about things that I love and what I'm passionate about. My daughters are my life. So yeah, way of being and that's basically it. And that way of being for myself has geared me with the gift to be able to live my life and, you know, get paid to be Indigenous and pay my bills and stuff. And the passions is what leads me. So I just want young people or anybody else to, you know, if they need to take a chance to drop their stuff and start doing what they're passionate about, there's always a way to figure out how you can make it your life. I've seen so many people transition to doing things that they love, that they've made now their life passion, like me and you. That's kind of like where this conversation has geared towards. I think within this podcast has been about my life, your life, how we came to be here and how it's possible. And yeah, that's kind of where my reflections are coming from, you know, focus on your way of being. And I'm easy to get a hold of. So if you ever want to do anything, know anything, learn anything, connect with anybody across North America. I'm partnered with 14 organizations across North America right now, from ones that connect young people globally through technology to ones that focus on, you know, support and health and alcoholism and drug addiction to ones that are fully immersed into climate action, anything, you know, we're involved in everything. So And any, if we can help in any way, shape, or form to support Indigenous people wanting to do more and be more, we're there.
That's awesome. Oh, sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead and say that again.
And Masti Jen for your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Huge. Masti Meda. Thank you. Okay, I'll stop the recording. I'll get you to say, like, oh my God, I keep hitting my headphones. It's just a fucking mess this week. But yeah, we'll stay on the line for a little while after this, and then we'll say bye. Okay, say bye.
Bye.
Okay, so that was our interview with Daron Fox from fucking April. Jesus Christ. I hope you liked it. And like I said, we talked about so many amazing things, and I really hope that you all feel inspired and uplifted by him and his story. Just honestly, listening to the episode back as I edited it, it was such good medicine. Like, Daron, my cousin, I love you. I can't wait to speak to you again. Thank you so much for your patience with me as I'm, again, like, learning my own lessons about healing. But damn body! Just kidding. Like I said, my body hears everything. I know this. I love my body. But for anyone else listening as well, you know, thank you for your patience. Thank you to the fans who have also come up to me at various conferences that I've been speaking at. I really do appreciate the support. And now that you kind of have like a little bit of a glimpse into where I've been and why, I hope you can really see how much that support actually really does mean to me, like at the time of receiving it and even now. And if you haven't had a chance yet to give the podcast 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do that. It really does make a huge difference in our visibility. Of course, share the episode and the upcoming workshops and just, yeah. Oh, okay. Anyway, that's all I have for you today. Remember to take care of your heart, mind, body, and spirit. Decolonizing the world is tough, but I see you out there working. Masti Meda, thank you very much for your time. Now go smudge yourself. I'm going to go drink a bunch of tea and not speak again for another week because holy moly, my throat hurts. Okay, love you. Bye-bye.